Welcome back. You're on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, finishing strong here in the 5 o'clock hour. Fourth quarter of the program begins right now. We talk some Royals baseball with none other than our Royals insider, Alec Lewis from The Athletic, joins us here in the program, brought to you by our friends at Hen House. Always a great place to get your ballpark experience started. If you're going to do some tailgating out at the ballpark, Hen House has got you covered, whether it's a delicatessen with their meat trays, all their different party trays that you can take. Or if you want to get some steaks on the grill, remember, certified Hereford beef sold exclusively at your neighborhood Hen House. Harry's Brewery's got you covered with all the adult beverages, national and craft beer specials, all the time at Harry's Brewery. It's all at Hen House. Find all the specials and more at henhouse.com. Alec, my friend, how are you?
I'm good. I started my day. I was at the pool just hanging out, talking to some people on the phone afterward, just getting ready for this Vinny debut. It's been good.
At the pool, flashing the six-pack, macking on some chicks. Is that what you're talking about?
Not at all. No. Okay. Like, okay. I don't have a six-pack. Look at me. You know what I look like. Come on. This is not – I barely have time to work out with all the Royals happening right now. Okay?
Yeah.
So, no.
That's good to know. I thought you might be one of those, like, you know, crafty little workout nuts, you know? Like, all of a sudden it's like, hey, he looks studious, like, he's dedicated to his craft. Look at that. He took his shirt off, and oh, my God, he's like a kung fu master or something. I don't know. You know, I have not been to the pool with you, Alec. Sorry.
No, thank God you haven't been to the pool with me. Yeah. Thank God I haven't been to the pool with you. No, it's all right. Don't take too much offense, please.
A shot at me out of nowhere.
Whoa.
Yeah, how about that, Kay?
You deserve it. You deserve it.
Apparently, Alec doesn't want to go to the pool with the Cannonball King of 1997.
Oh, boy, I do an oral history on that.
You look like Michael Phelps next to me.
All right, let's get off that subject.
Abercrombie model next to me.
We've gone as far as we can go with that one.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah, turn the page.
The trade, let's start and get your opinion of Carlos Santana. I think this is a win for the Royals. I think most of Royals fans thought that they were not going to get anything for Carlos Santana when word, it might even have been you, I think it was you who either wrote or told us that the Royals were hanging on to Santana, hoping he could get hot so they could flip him in exchange for something in a trade, knowing full well that a rental player, that he wasn't going to bring back a whirlwind. I give the Royals credit. I think most, certainly all fans and maybe even most of the baseball world thought, you're not getting anything for this guy. And they did. I think that's a win for the front office.
Yeah, I had conversations with scouts like late in May who were just like, I just don't see the window in which he would be valuable enough for any type of return. And so, it was curious at the time. But what happened was the Royals made a change at hitting coach. The group led by Alex Zumwalt now identified some stuff with his contact points on fastballs, kind of implemented it into his pregame routines, and he tore it up in June, specifically against fastballs. His plate discipline has always been what it is, and I think just that track record of the chase rate and the plate discipline and then him coming around against pitches coming fast at him at the plate, I think intrigued multiple teams enough to kind of bid, and the Royals ended up with a right-handed reliever who's 27 years old, throws from a low slot, kind of like Jose Quas, and a young starting pitcher from Wake Forest, 23 years old, not completely young, but young enough. And so, yeah, it's definitely an interesting one, and it obviously paved the way for Vinny Pasquantino. So, to your point, impressive that the Royals were able to do that for the second straight year with Jorge Soler. You wonder what it each year would have been like if both of those guys were hitting the way they did late out of the gate. But, here we are.
Yeah, and you mentioned Jorge Soler and making that deal. I don't remember. What did they get for Jorge Soler? Do you remember?
Casey Kalich. So it was a right-handed reliever. And I think that's part of what's interesting here is that, I mean, Carlos Santana is 7 years older than Soler was when they made that trade, and yet the Royals got two arms. And, yes, they included cash considerations in this deal. But, yeah, to get this type of return for a guy 7 years older than Jorge Soler was and without the type of power that Jorge has, definitely interesting and notable and something that should be mentioned.
Yeah, and I think the interesting part here for me is you mentioned Alex Umwalt, you know, being key to the turnaround for Carlos Santana. And I'm curious, you know, Wes Johnson left the Minnesota Twins, their pitching coach. I talked about this with Randy last night on our Kauffman Corner podcast. And, you know, Wes Johnson left the Twins as their pitching coach to take the LSU pitching coach job. And your cohort, Eno Saris, was on with us yesterday in the 5 o'clock hour, if anybody missed it. Hour number 4 of the podcast under the program at 810WHB.com. You know, he had found out that Johnson was making $350,000 with the Twins. He got $390,000 to go to LSU, so a $40,000 increase. And he said, you know, a lot of people will be like, well, really, are you going to go from, you know, big leagues to college for $40,000? He said, well, the kicker is that he's got incentives just like a manager would have, a college manager.
Yeah.
You know, they win the SEC, they go to the College World Series, they win the College World Series. In all of his incentives, if they would all kick in, could take him to $750,000. And one of the things Randy and I talked about is that, like, really, are big league teams really that cheap with their coaching staff that colleges are now outpaying them? And if that's the case, how afraid is Zumwalt, you know, tax on win after win after win? Should we be afraid that Vanderbilt is going to come steal him from the Royals, or will the Royals match what college is paying? I mean, this, and to me, this seems like the untapped, you know, uncapped, certainly, world where the Royals can make a difference by overspending on the coaches that can actually make a difference.
It's a really interesting situation, and I think, I mean, obviously the Wes Johnson move kind of brought it to the forefront of a lot of people within the game and media spheres minds. The last few months, through many conversations with people, one of the things that stood out is just how important, like, minor league coaches, hitting pitching coaches, manage, like, how important those roles really are. And obviously the big league coaching roles are, I mean, just as if not more important. And so I've long thought, like, I don't know what teams are paying these types of roles, but if you paid more than anybody else and could get the best coaches in those roles, I think it would be an advantage. As far as Alex Umwalt specifically, I mean, this is a guy who has long been close with Dayton Moore. He was obviously, he kind of grew up in the same Braves type of environment that many of the front office did. He has 5 young kids, and they've lived in Kansas City for some time, so I don't foresee him making some drastic move. But I will tell you that it is pretty obvious. When a guy, earns the job that Alex Umwalt obviously earned and has seen the results that he's seen since he took over, the value is the value. And it's pretty obvious when you talk about situations like Carlos Santana or talk about just what Bobby Witt Jr. has been able to do over the last stretch. I mean, a lot of this, I think at times it's hard to really know how much the coach at the big league level impacts given the type of talent experience these players have. But, I mean, you talk to a lot of people, it really matters. And the trust that the coaches garner with the players and their ability to kind of provide the energy every day, it's really important. And so I think we've over this last month and a half or whatever it's been, we've seen Alex Umwalt's value that the Royals have long felt that he's long shown to the Royals, and that I think the industry has also known for a while, given what he's been able to do since they revamped the hitting department in 2019.
So you would not say that Royals fans should be nervous that Umwalt will be traded, or will not be traded, taken away by either a bigger spending major league club or by a college club?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a possibility, but I think nervous is probably too much. I mean, I just think he's proven his value, and I don't know what spending is possible, but you can just see how much he matters, and I would think the Royals I know the Royals noticed that too, so you would hope he's compensated for that.
Well, I just say this, who's more valuable to the Royals now and in the long haul, Zach Greinke or Umwalt? Forget about price, who's more valuable?
That's fascinating. I mean, I, I don't know. I don't want to.
I have an obvious, definitive answer.
I think it's Alex Zumwalt.
I don't think I know. It's Zumwalt. Yeah, and they paid $13 million for Zach Greinke. So to me, there should be no price that it takes to keep him, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I continue to say. I mean, from what he's done beginning in the fall of 2019, and I was out there in Arizona as they first began their skills acquisition camp. He, Drew Saylor, Keone Duren, Mike Tozar. They scrapped essentially what the Rose had done. They implemented the data. They have worked with the performance science and behavioral science department. They've integrated all of it, and it helped turn guys like MJ Melendez and Nick Prado back around. It's helped continue to progress guys like Vinny Pasquantino and others. So his value is obvious.
The purpose of the exercise is to one, think it through, then two, come to a conclusion, and then three, show that if the Boston Red Sox hires Zumwalt away, there's no excuse, right? If Vanderbilt hires Zumwalt away, there is no they gave a price. I mean, Zach Greinke, $13 million. What I'm getting at is it's $2.5 million for the top offensive and defensive coordinators in college football now, right? And we're not even talking about baseball going to that point. They don't generate the same kind of revenue, but Major League Baseball generates the kind of revenue that college football programs do. And a guy that can take Prado from being not a prospect to making him back into a prospect, MJ Melendez not a prospect into now a guy who's at least surviving, if not, taking steps towards thriving at the big league level. A guy who can turn Carlos Santana around and create value where there was no value. There's no at least on the pay scale that exists right now, the Royals have no leg to stand on if they were to say, well, they offered him $800,000. So give him $9 million. I mean, that's what I'm getting at.
And I completely agree with you. And this isn't to minimize Alex Zumwalt and what he's done, but I mean, it is a group. I mean, the thing I think about often too with how coaching staffs at the big league level and even in the minors now are is, I mean, these it's not really so much of just like there's the hitting coach. I mean, it is a hitting group of different minds, of different thinkers. So, Alex Zumwalt has been kind of at the forefront because he's been the director of hitting performance. I mean, it has taken guys like Drew Saylor and guys like Mike Tozar and Keone Duren to make all of this happen. It takes a group. And to your point, I mean, you would do whatever you could, you would think, to keep that group intact if they're continuing to reap the reward.
We're talking to Alec Lewis here in the program. All right, so they get back a couple of live arms for Carlos Santana. They open up the spot for Vinny Pasquantino, who came to town yesterday and will make his debut for the Kansas City Royals tonight. What is your expectation for what Vinny Pasquantino will be in a Royals uniform?
I think my expectation is he'll give you a competitive at-bat every time he steps up to the plate. And while he may struggle early because this is going to be the best pitching he's ever faced, I think he's going to be a guy who walks a lot, more than most Royals prospects have in the past probably 15 years, and who's going to hit for some pop and who's going to bring a personality to a clubhouse that desperately needs it. Maybe not so early, but I mean, he's a character. He's a leader. Guys gravitate towards him because he's funny and he's driven to win. And so I think that entire package it means I expect a guy who will be a pivotal piece to what the Royals are trying to do for some time. But his plate discipline ability will stand out, I think, pretty easily. I mean, he tracks pitches in ways that guys just rarely can.
We played this game earlier. I played it last night with Randy. A comp. You got a player you would comp to what he will end up being?
I haven't been around long enough, probably, to be able to feel confident with that. I
okay.
Mean, I know people then, throw,
then let
people
me
throw
let
around
me,
the.
Go ahead. Okay. I'm sorry. No, I apologize. I interrupted you.
People throw around like Billy Butler just because, like, you look at Vinny Pasquantino and he's not like you wouldn't call him like some supreme athlete, but as I've talked to a lot of people who are around Billy. It's like he was like so athletic in the box, and I think that's how Vinny is. Like in the box, it's just an impressive display of just attack plan and what he's trying to do. And so that's a name, I guess, that people throw around. I'd be curious to hear. I don't know if it's like Kevin Youkilis or something, but be curious to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, Billy Butler was not athletic in the box or on his way to breakfast or getting out of bed.
Just standing there?
Standing there. He was not athletic. You know, I get what people are saying. He had some hands, right?
He looked slow while riding in a fast-traveling car.
Now, but Billy,
I'm quoting that from like scouts and people who have been around him. So
right. Listen, I do get what they're saying. Trust me, that phrase is jumping out to Royals fans out there. But I get what they're saying because his hands were very good, right? Like that's where you have to be athletic in the box. You've got to be able to get your hands through the zone and the wrists have to have power. And he had all those things. In fact, he had, you know, 20 home runs and 50 doubles before the age of 23, which, and maybe there was another stat in there, maybe it was a 300 batting average as well. I can't remember. And we looked it up at the time, and the other players that had done what he had done were Ted Williams, Alex Rodriguez. The worst guy on the list was Grady Sizemore. It was like six Hall of Famers, two guys that were, Griffey might have been on the list, two deadbolt locks for the Hall of Fame, and then Grady Sizemore. And Billy Butler, like that was the list. And I was like, holy cow. And, you know, yeah. You thought this is going to be Edgar Martinez, right? This is a guy who's going to chase it. It fell apart quicker as soon as he started getting old and things started slowing down. I think part of it was his kick. He had this, you know, and again, I'm no hitting coach, but there was a number of different things going on. Right. In that swing. And he was just, his hands were so good that he could do it. But when he started losing some of that hand speed, then he was it. It was over. He crashed very quickly. The guy that I came up with for him, and this is just off a little bit of looking, you know, at some of his highlights down there. Again, no qualifications to be a hitting coach whatsoever. And then a lot of his numbers and his kind of body type. He's taller than this guy, overall bigger, but he's got the stocky frame. Matt Stairs is the guy that I land on for him. And you know, some people may bristle at Matt Stairs. Matt Stairs was like, you know, a guy that put up really good numbers, right? Early on, had a 38 home run season. Now, the ball was maybe a little bit livelier at that time, but he was a take-and-rake guy. And, you know, for his career, I think people might be surprised. The slash lines, 262, 356, 477 for an 832 OPS for his career, which lasted from the age of 24 to 43. With prime years of 27, 26, 38, 21 home runs over four consecutive years. I think that's, you know, I'm kind of feeling me some Matt Stairs out of the guy. And I know that'll disappoint some people. But because they think of Matt Stairs, who came here as a part-time player, but was still a very productive piece. I think he'll be an everyday Matt Stairs, and then we'll live on as a productive part-time player for quite a while because his strike zone judgment's so good.
Yeah, no, I mean I'm looking at some of Matt Stairs' career numbers. I mean he had a 14 WAR, 117 OPS plus for his career, got on base. You said it, 356. I mean. I do think in terms of like just what Vinny could provide. I mean, you see it. You saw it with Carlos Santana. Like even though he began this year, he really struggled to hit the ball. He was still walking. I think in the first 2 months, essentially at like a top five rate in baseball. And that's not to say that Vinny is going to be that way. But I really do think this type of cognitive ability is something that's just kind of innate. And Vinny has it. And I think, again, like I think people will see that. And whether it ends up being a career like Matt Stairs or something completely different, I think that type of ability, considering kind of the Royals, I don't know, just the strikeout, the swing and miss over the years, I think it's going to be a welcome sight for people.
We looked up the our 2050 stat. Curtis has the details on it.
It was 20 homers, 50 doubles, age 23 or younger. Billy Butler was the sixth player ever to do it. Hank Greenberg, Alex Rodriguez, Albert Pujols, Miguel Cabrera, Grady Sizemore. There has since been a seventh, Rafael Devers, back in 2019. But that was those were the five that did it before Butler.
And again,
four Hall of Famers. And Grady Sizemore.
And it was 20 homers, 50 doubles.
23 or younger.
23 or younger. I mean, that's out the door, by the way, here with Pascatino because he's already 24. So he's not going to be able to accomplish that. But Billy Butler, I mean, if he's Billy Butler and can play a sturdy first base, like what are they getting defensively? You went down, you've seen him play a little bit. The Royals, I you know, take with a grain of salt any defensive report I get on Royals prospects from Royals people because they seem to be a little bit exaggerated. Certainly, I think MJ Melendez, the latest in that category. But what do you think he is defensively? Is he a guy that can man first base every day if Prado can't get the strikeouts together or is used in a trade elsewhere?
Yeah, I think he is. I think he is. He's continued to improve over there. I mean, I like you said, I was down in Omaha. I watched him that day. I mean, he's definitely capable. I don't think it's going to blow anybody away. It's not Eric Hosmer. It's not like Gold Glove stuff. But I think he's mobile enough to do it. And, I mean, this is kind of a different conversation. We can stick on the defense if you want. But I do think, I mean, this Royals season has been putrid in terms of their 26-46. But this is one of those times where, as negative as I think a lot of people are understandably, here's, I believe, an 11th round pick who there's the area scout Jim Farr stayed on while others pulled off, and partly because of Vinny's back injury history, and now here he is, like a top 100 prospect. It's one of those, like, I know things are as bad as they are, but I think it's all, you got to give credit to this type of situation. I know I'm shifting the conversation a little bit from the defense, but I think it's important because, I don't know, we can get so caught up in the negative, understandably and rightfully oftentimes, but there are wins like this right now think it's important to point out.
All right, let's take a break. Alec Lewis, Beach Bod, the man who you will see at the pool, flexing quite a bit, maybe even some baby oil, you know, when he heads out, is with us, our Royals insider.
Stop.
From The Athletic, if you're in Alec's apartment, you want to call in and tell us about him parading around the pool, that's fine. Give us a call, 913-3810-810. I will take a break. More with Alec Lewis. We'll talk some pitching with Alec Lewis, our Royals insider. Next here in the program, Alec is brought to you, as always, by our friends at Hen House. If you're getting ready to go out to the game tonight to see the debut of Vinny Pascantino and you're going to hang out with some friends, maybe just want a couple of pops in the parking lot, go by the Harry's Brewery. Everything you need to tailgate for a Royals game is right there at Hen House. Find all of the specials at henhouse.com. Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you as we make our way through a very busy Tuesday. The debut of Vinny Pascantino coming up tonight at Kauffman Stadium. Royals fans very excited. Alec Lewis, very excited because now he doesn't have to travel to Omaha to check it out. The biggest story for the Royals is now Vinny Pascantino playing for the Royals, pitching a big part of the equation as well. Alec's appearance here brought to you by our friends at Hen House. You can see their great specials, including everything back at the Butcher Block, where the only place in town you can get the certified Hereford beef, the finest beef anywhere around, is raised right in our very own backyard. It's certified Hereford beef, and it's sold exclusively at Hen House, where they trim it 1/8-inch trim, not a quarter-inch trim like the other guys, 1/8-inch trim, best meat counter around. It's the Butcher Block at your neighborhood Hen House. Jackson Kowar, we discussed his performance. Very impressive, coming back up for the Royals in relief. What was your takeaway from his performance?
The fastball was much more playable, and that was a tangible adjustment that the Royals made. They upped his release point, trying to get more carry on his fastball. It resulted in some fouls, which I think was a good sign. And so I just think that tangible adjustment and seeing that at the big level was my biggest takeaway. Yes, he struck out five guys. Yes, he also walked three. Yes, he relied heavily on his changeup, and the slider wasn't as sharp as I'd seen in Omaha. But ultimately, for that change to show itself at the big level, at least for one night, says something to me.
Yeah. Are the Royals still viewing him as a starter, right? Like, I know they want everybody to be a starter until they prove they can't, and then they'll send him back to the bullpen. But I sit here and look like, God, if they could find some starting pitching, Brad Keller and Jackson Kowar looks like one hell of a 1-2 punch and a multi-inning 1-2 punch out of the bullpen. Like, that's where we've seen both these guys Very short, very small sample size with Jackson Coar. I get it. But it does look like he's figured some things out. And the longer he pitched last night, the worse it got. Not that it ever got really bad. But 5 Ks to 3 walks is not a great ratio. 3 walks and 3 1/3 innings is not great. And those are things that, like, you know, he was able to get away with because, you know, he had a lot of things working. But, man, for 2 innings, lights out, man. And I would love to see the Royals be able to get enough starting pitching to where they could leave him there. And if later on they say, okay, let's give it a go, let's give it a go. But how about the kid have some success a couple innings at a time, 9 batters, never see a guy twice, and give him the rest of this year to attack and you know, just be that guy there where he doesn't have to see a lineup a second time.
Yeah, I agree with you on allowing him to do that. But, I mean, you said, like, I would love to see them get some starting pitch. Well, like, how? Like, they've obviously chosen the route of drafting and developing starting pitching, and because starting pitchers cost a lot in the free agent market. So, I guess, like, you draft and develop these guys because you wanted them to be the starting pitching. But if they're not, then you need to supplement that. How? Like, that's the problem. I think, like, these guys kind of need to be the starting pitching because this is kind of – that's kind of been their plan. And I don't – I mean, I there's nothing to take away what Jackson did last night and the work he's put in, because it has been a lot, and there's been a lot of negative over the last 2 years for him. But, yeah, I mean, Chris Bubich pretty much pitching with one pitch last night, the changeup. The curveball's not really that competitive. The fastball gets crushed continuously. Brady Singer pitched pretty well, I thought, the other day, but I don't know, the more he's seen big league teams, it seems like the less success he's had this year. And I just don't know. I mean, finding that starting pitching kind of has been the thing going back to 2018.
Yeah, I don't want him to be and I get it, like, somebody's got to facilitate the game, but if there's somebody else that can be a sacrificial lamb, like, Coar does. Last night he looked like he could be a weapon. And I'd hate to burn 3 or 4 years of service time the way Luke Hochaver had service time burnt in this constant effort of trying to make him a starter. Or really in that, and I think at that time it was, well, who else? If not him, then who? And if he could have progressed back to the bullpen, could 13 have you know, if he'd had a couple of years, you know, mowing guys down in the back of the pen, would he have avoided his Tommy John surgery? Would he have been enough of a weapon in 13 to be a difference to get the Royals into the postseason that year? I just like to see them be quicker in getting to what a player is and being able to identify, listen, this is what he is. He's a reliever, and let's you know, unleash him in that role.
Yeah, I'm with you. In some ways, I guess, but also, this season is what it is. The Royals are barreling towards 100 losses. I mean, maybe not that many, but probably pretty close. And so, I mean, what is the – I'm with you in that. I think he – I mean, last night he looked really good in that short spurt, and he's gaining confidence. And with the road that's been for him, that seems like it's of utmost importance. But also, I mean, what is the hurry for this year?
And so let me answer that. Sorry to cut you off. Apology number 4, I think, of this conversation. but let me answer that before you go too far. I guess where my thinking is, look, the trade deadline is looming, and while they're not contending, so that makes them an obvious seller, if they believe they're not that far away, or if there is a pitcher that has 3 years control that a team is making available for prospects, I mean, I wouldn't mind them getting proven starters back, you know, particularly if there's a team that's just on a salary dump, to lock in, solidify the rotation, create competition so that, you know, Chris Bubiches don't feel like, well, they've only got one other option, so I can just toss it out here, and allow guys like Coar to you know, really progress in a bullpen level. Just to eliminate the, if not him, then who, answer as to why the guy's starting. You know what I mean? If they could get 5 guys to facilitate the game, if nothing else, and you hope that Daniel Lynch and Brady Singer are more than that, then it allows them to, you know, develop him as a reliever if that's what they think his ultimate value is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes it, again, like if you can acquire for the right price a starter that has 3 years of control, yeah, I mean, I think it's something that I'm sure that they'll pursue or think about. But, I mean, then again, we've talked about Brad Keller. He's got a year and a half remaining. What do you do with him? If you get rid of him, then that's another hole. I mean, it's there's a lot of moving parts. I see what you're saying. For right now, for Jackson Coar, what is best for him? And I think it is to continue to gain confidence. And that's probably, again, to your point, like in short spurts, the big league level. The one thing that I get a little like worried about is like he started in the bullpen, didn't pitch very much, goes down to Omaha, builds up to a starter, then comes back. Now he's in the bullpen. He obviously pitched 3 innings last night. That's positive. But if he goes a while and doesn't pitch, then you kind of, his workload builds back. I get a little worried about going up and down with the workload. Not really sure how much of an impact that can or will have. It's like a question for the performance science. But, I mean, well, otherwise, I
hear you, but if he's effective, there shouldn't. It would be more about giving him too much work than him becoming stale, right? Like, I mean, you know, I mean, there's no shortage of workload for Scotty Barlow. Like, if he can be a weapon back there and nobody goes deep into games anymore, except for Brady Singer the other day when he went into the ninth inning. But for the most part, you know you've got a minimum 3, if not 4 plus, with the way this rotation's going, innings to get every night. So if you can say, listen, kid, you're going every third night for 2 innings. Like,
I agree. And I think right now that's probably the best fit for him. I guess, like, I see Chris Bubich struggle, and I wonder what they're going to do with that, and then maybe that's a rotation. Like, I mean, obviously Daniel Lynch is hurt, but we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Like, if Jackson Coar is most effective in these short spurts at the big league level for right now, and he's gaining confidence, I think you just let him keep rolling in that spot. And also, I mean, this bullpen right now is like absolutely depleted. I mean, it's just not. Besides Scott Barlow, you really. I mean, Jose Quast they've relied on, but otherwise it's brutal down there right now. So you kind of need guys to step up.
And this is a little bit of a Matheny thing too, right? If Matheny could have a guy that he knows he can pretty much count on that can come in and get him 9 batters. So if he goes 1-2-3, 1-2-3, I mean, he could go for a third inning. Then that can help solidify that bullpen. That can take some wear and tear off some people. But Matheny has to build that bullpen. Listen. You know, I don't think Ned Yost would even say that he was on the precipice of splitting an atom at any time in the near future. But, you know, Ned Yost was smart when it came to baseball and pitching, and he lined up that bullpen. He created the roles, and he, you know, knew how to put that together, and he got it in order, and he managed them well and didn't overwork them. He had some Tommy Johns, but every, you know, bullpen does. I think... You know, this is one that, if he can be effective, this is somewhat a way to test Matheny as well, right? If you give him a handful of guys that can get it done, then you ought to be able to create at least a seventh, eighth, ninth combo that works. And I think it's time for him, you know, to find that we can transition off Coar to just like, you know, it's time for Matheny to start making some of these pieces come together, is it not?
I mean... I get the question, and I think, like, I could take it a lot of ways. In terms of the bullpen overworking type, I mean, I've thought about this because, obviously, there are a bunch of guys hurt. But, I mean, you look at, like, the inning pitch. I mean, Scott Barlow, who seems like is out there every single night for at least 1 inning, maybe 2, I mean, he's pitched fewer innings than, like, I think 7 fewer innings than some of the most productive relievers. And so I don't know, in terms of overworking, like, you can really say that. And also, I mean, in asking, like, it's time for him to make the pieces work. I mean, just go down the roster of the bullpen arms right now. I mean, it's Matt Peacock. It's Amir Garrett, who has a 7 ERA. It's Dylan Coleman, who is still really young and has kind of started to find it recently. But, I mean, I don't know how – I mean, you can only work so much if you're Mike Matheny. Now, I'm not just, like, taking all the blame and putting it elsewhere, because it's obviously, I mean, it's the onus is on him to make it work and win games. That's his job. But I just, there's just such little talent down there. I mean, Jake Brent came in the spring with the elbow thing, kind of pitched through it, did not pitch well, and now is still in the IL. Josh Thaumont, they say it's a neck. His velocity's down to like 92 his last outing. Very concerning situation. So it's kind of a mess down there, and it's problematic. And I just don't know ultimately how much Mike Matheny can really do with the pieces that exist.
Okay.
I mean, and again, like we could talk about differently with Mike Matheny. Like, I don't know. It's been a week ago, walked in the clubhouse. It's just not, I mean, it's just like lifeless. And I've talked about this with you now going back for 3 weeks.
I get that. You know, I was watching some of the Wimbledon today, and Coco Gauff, yeah, was playing, and she had a horrible first set, and she looked terrible out there, and this unseeded player was beating her. And then the next set, she wins, I think, 6-3, and they said, look at the bounce in her step and look at the results. Now, is the bounce in the step coming from the results,
right,
or are the results
right
coming from the bounce in the step? And at some point, I get a chicken or egg, but you got to turn the tide somewhere. And if you lock in, you know, a sandwich pick that's been a top 100 prospect in Jackson Coar, Scott Barlow, who's a guy who people have talked about having closer stuff, Dylan Coleman, who throws 100. I mean, at some point, Amir Garrett, they coveted. They signed him for a reason. You know, Quas gives him a different look and has been a fact. Like, at some point, stop blaming the tools. Right, like and that point may not be now, and I'm not asking you to declare it now, but I do think the organization has to decide at some point. Like, it's what I've said a million times this year. You don't want to fire Cal Eldred, fine, right? But either then somebody in the scouting's got to go, or somebody in the development's got to go. There's a breakdown, right? Like, they decided where the breakdown was. It was Terry Bradshaw. They haven't come to that conclusion, but all signs are just saying, well, they've got a date that's later, because there's nothing right now that says that the pitching development in this organization is a machine, the way the hitting seems to be settling into. So I'm fine if that date for them is not now. I would love, and they're not going to say it publicly, but I'd love to be in a meeting, because what I would say is, like, look, we got to set a time where it's time to win, right? And these guys either are or aren't good enough. If they're good enough, then it's on Mike Matheny. If they're not good enough, then who do we need to bring in here and talk about replacing? Because somewhere along the line, you know, 5 years, 6 years into a rebuild, it can't be like, what a mess we've got down in the pen. Like, that doesn't, well, yes, we would win, we would contend, but we've got a mess in the pen. You made the mess. Flush the toilet. Let's go.
And I mean, I'm not arguing that at all. I mean,
no, I know you're
back
not.
In before the lockout, I mean, I remember sitting in a meeting room with Dayton and JJ, and they talked about their focus for the offseason primarily was building a, I remember the quote was like, elite championship caliber bullpen. And so if they set out to do that, and they believe they did, and the results have been what they've been, then again, like, to your point, the responsibility falls on either the players or the people assisting the players, and probably kind of combination of the two. If they didn't do that, then obviously it's on them. So, yeah, I mean, I mentioned that positive note earlier about Vinny and just his draft status, but I mean, the pitching right now, I try to be very fair and very kind, but I mean, you look at any metric in the big leagues, in the minor leagues, you can look at the advanced metrics, the stuff, the location. I've done it all. I've looked at a lot of it. I've talked to people from other organizations in the business, and it's just at a place that's hard to really capture. So, yeah.
So melancholy. Yeah.
Okay.
Wonk, wonk, wonk.
A little bit of, yeah, melancholy coupled with, you know, Napoleon Dynamite's brother. So, I guess, you know, you could say things are getting pretty serious.
Things are not very good.
Yeah. All right.
I think you just called me Napoleon Dynamite. Thanks.
No, his brother.
You're
Kip.
Kip.
Okay. Kip, his brother.
Makes me feel better.
Kip Dynamite.
Really?
Kip Dynamite. At least you're chatting online for 6 hours with a woman.
MMA
fighter.
Got
that going for you. Our Final Four is brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, the official healthcare provider of your Royals. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System can see you quickly. Get more details at their website, kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. I start you with this, Alec Lewis. Mm-hmm. Does Chris Bubich start 100 games in a Royals uniform?
What's he at now?
You would ask. You'd be that guy, that stickler for the rules. You goof. You hang on. I'll tell you. You know, I asked this question basically to get the concept of whether
like
or not
33.
He's at how many?
Probably 33 or something.
I'll tell you. I thought you were looking it up. Bubic has started in his career 40 games. No. I got it first, Curtis. 40 games.
40 games
in his career. Does he start 100 for the Royals?
No.
Okay. There it is. All right. Who makes?
And that's not to say he's not starting elsewhere. Let me be clear.
Yeah. Okay. Becoming a good reliever. There are other options for him to be productive for the Royals. Bigger impact for the Royals: Mills or Fleming? The two guys they got back in the trade. Who has the bigger impact?
Mills.
Okay. Does Heasley start 100 games in a Kansas City Royals uniform? And I can tell you, because I opened that up at the same time, that Jonathan Heasley has started 11 games for the Kansas City Royals at this point. Does he get 100 starts in a Royals uniform?
Why not? Yeah, why not?
So you're a little bit more bullish.
I have faith in his fastball. Yep. I have faith in his fastball.
You have faith in his fastball. That's fantastic. All right, when was the last time you bought a ticket to a Royals game? Or a baseball game of any kind?
Royals game? I don't think I've ever bought a ticket to a Royals game.
Okay. Major League Baseball?
Major League Baseball game? I don't know. I think I went to a Mets game years ago with my dad and my family. So that might be it. I mean, it's been a while. I watch a lot of baseball in my work time, and go to ballparks. I don't do much of it outside of that. Not that I don't love it, but I need a reprieve, especially after watching some of this stuff. So
Alec Lewis has been our guest, beach bot, freeloader. He does it all. Brought to you by our friends at Hen House. Alec, great stuff, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Ren. Cannonball King of 1997 is what you said, and I just don't even know where that came from. Thank you, guys.
It's a fact. You can look it up.
But first, the good sense, end of the hour answer. Who's the only player to play in three straight World Series for three different teams?
Ooh, I think I know this. Don Baylor did something along those lines.
Don Baylor, 86 Red Sox, 87 Twins, 88 A's. He is still the Angels' single-season RBI king.
Also, at one point, was the hit-by-pitch king, was he not?
Yes.
Don Baylor could lean into one. He could Rudy Stein it with the best of them.
Absolutely.
Don Baylor playing for some good sense. You can get your good sense on your way home tonight, goodsensesubs.com. That's goodsensesubs.com to put in your order. 30% more meat. They slice that meat and cheese fresh right in front of you. Baking the bread fresh twice each day. Founded in Lenexa, Kansas, locally owned and operated. That is your good sense. Go to goodsensesubs.com or download the app. Don't forget to be part of that loyalty club. 10% back off every purchase. That's what you get. It's the best loyalty club in town with the best sandwiches in town. It's your neighborhood Good Sense. Order it right now at goodsensesubs.com. Leave you with this. Vinny Pascantino getting his career off the ground tonight. I'm going to the ballpark, as a matter of fact. Looking forward to seeing Vinny Pascantino's debut. Patience, yes. We want to have patience because he might have some struggles. But, could this town use a guy to come in and just hit? Could he, you know, I heard people, you know, I mentioned Matt Stairs is my comp for him on what I think he could be. He's bigger than Matt Stairs, but I mean, I think that kind of presence and slash line, but a Bob Hamlin like start would be just what the doctor ordered. Now, different finish.
Yes, please.
But Bob Hammond-like start would be a great one. Vinny Pascantino, I will say, we're starting to get a number of the young players up here. We've made that reference. The 2012 team won only 72 games, yet 10 of their 12 best were on that 14-pennant winning team, and 9 of the 12 were on the World Championship team. It could be happening again right now. We'll see you at the ballpark. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.